telehealth consultations were one of the most valuable ways consumers were able to keep up with health checks during the pandemic. But as the Australian Journal of General Practice has pointed out, the barriers include not having access to technology, challenges with physical examinations when needed, and issues to do with confidentiality. This has not prevented many corporate entities from joining in the fray as a potential money earner by sourcing consumer health service provision during the post-pandemic era. The latest from business circles to join in is the retail giant Woolworths. It announced its HealthLife online portal, offering telehealth among many of its health and nutrition services. Critics are concerned that those who can't afford GP medical fees will see this as an alternative with potential dire health results. I caught up with Amy Steele, Associate Professor, School of Public Health from the University of Technology, Sydney, to find out more.
The issue that we're concerned about is the commercial imperatives that are driving this. The GPs who are offering their services and within a GP setting and context and providing online consultations in ordinary circumstances have the entire model that they've built around based exactly on meeting their professional standards. And having a player like Woolworths that has quite significant commercial drivers and shareholders and stakeholder drivers underpinning the delivery of healthcare exposes experience to all sorts of potential complications. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that there are these issues, but they're the potential for these issues. At the moment, legislation isn't really in place to provide protection to the public.
What kind of safety measures should someone be looking at if they did decide to use this service online? I mean, you can even access a GP, but how do you know that it's a reliable GP?
In some ways, the GPs are less problematic than some of the others, partly because GPs are a registered health profession. And so if they are identified as a general practitioner in Australia, that means they've met certain standards and they're adhering to a code of conduct, which is nationally consistent. And so there's less of a concern about that, but it's really the link between prescription and pharmaceutical, which are being provided by and sold by the same service or the same company that is also employing or consulting, contracting, depending on the contractual arrangements, the GP. You actually have this interweb, which at the moment is quite separated in primary healthcare. The GP, you consult the GP, they provide a prescription, and then the prescription, you take the prescription to whichever pharmacy you like. You might have a conversation about a generic pharmaceutical. You know, and that's a different transaction and a different aspect of the health encounter to the GP. Whereas at this one, it's kind of interwoven. And so we just need to make sure there are protections in place to ensure that there aren't any commercial pressures on GPs to prescribe particular pharmaceuticals or other elements to that are influencing the nature of the healthcare.
We have heard those kind of stories where there's pressure from pharmaceuticals to actually prescribe certain drugs. And because they want access to those resources, the GPs, you can't really blame them for it. How is the client protected with that if they did use the services provided for by Woolies?
It's not clear what sort of protections. The legislation hasn't really been set up to allow for this coexisting commercial involvement. Even where you've got a pharmacy maybe practicing within a hospital or co-located with a general practitioner's clinic, out in the community at the moment, they're still actually run by separate proprietary organisations. So you've got the pharmacist running the general practitioner clinics running in the general practitioner care. And so there's still some level of separation. And so we really need to get some clarity as to how that relationship is being managed to ensure that GPs aren't being put under undue pressure to prescribe things that shouldn't be prescribed. And certainly that's even more amplified in the naturopathic consultations proposed through the same Woolworths model, because it's quite concerning, really, that there's no cost for accessing the naturopathic consultations. Because in order for Woolworths to be paying for the naturopaths, and in this instance, we know that naturopaths are employed rather than contracted in the way that the GPs and the dietitians are, they're actually employed. In order for them to make some money out of that consultation, There'll be product sales attached to it. That relationship is problematic, particularly because naturopathic care involves a lot of diet and lifestyle change, and as much as it may or may not involve herbal and vitamin prescription. And so we need, like, one of the questions we raised is it still okay for someone to consult the naturopath and get advice without sold a product, the expectation of that?
Is there some sort of code of conduct or self-regulative framework that can be used by the patient when they're actually using the service of the naturopath through this online portal?
Compared to the general practice, one of the biggest challenges we have is the government has consistently chosen not to pursue regulation for naturopathy. So it is currently a self-regulated profession. That means that Woolworths are actually challenged to find appropriately qualified. And there are appropriately qualified naturopaths out there. They've got a minimum of degree level education, but there's a lot of variety in the levels of education that are out there. And then Woolworths don't necessarily have the ability to make good discerning decisions around that. And so we do have, you know, a self-regulatory body for naturopathy, the Australian Register of Naturopaths and Herbalists. It's voluntary, though, so a small number of naturopaths who actually choose to enrol in that. We've got professional associations, but they all have varying standards. So it actually creates a lot of complexity for being able to navigate that space. And so you don't have the same protections as you would for the GPs because they are regulated by the government. Mm-hmm. Naturopaths are not yet regulated by the government. You add to that that there's no charge, and you add to that there's potentially an expectation of selling product. Puts the public at risk, particularly considering that this is the health consultation that is free to the public, mm-hmm. and so potentially going to get more uptake.
Yes, and of course, for the low income at the moment, with all the interest rate rises, you know, mm-hmm. most people would just not think twice about using the free service and may then easily follow the advice given, thinking that they have the skills that they don't have, that the clients don't have. I'm curious to just check in with you, Amy. What usually happens when you need to register as a naturopath? Like, what things are looked for when you have to register within the body, the self-governing body at the moment?
Within the self-governing body, that's actually been built to mirror the health practitioner regulation body that the government has set up. So it's actually got this very similar standards. It's a minimum of 4 years of degree. There's a set education standards that those degrees have to meet. There's code of conduct and code of ethics. There's a whole range of competency standards. So an applicant has to show that they've got it. Have to agree to a probity check. They have to, you know, declare to have no previous, you know, criminal history. So there's all of that information is provided at the point of registration. And most naturopaths maintain membership of a professional association, which will also, some will have code of ethics, some will not. Some will have degree level requirements, some will not. And so there's a lot of variability within that itself.
Is it feasible at all for potential clients to check if they want to access those services, check credentials of the naturopath that are actually providing these services with Health Online?
Yes, in theory, but even within a lot of the professional associations, a naturopath being listed as being a member of that association is an optional thing for the naturopath. And so simply identifying that someone's not listed with that association doesn't mean they're not a member. So no, there's no transparency, really. It's really puts the public at risk, mostly. And I believe that Woolworths has made a point of employing naturopaths that are bachelor qualified. So they are the degree level trained naturopaths, which is great. But I think it's more of a wider implication. And certainly we're not suggesting that the naturopaths that have been employed by Woolworths will be providing poor quality care. Certainly degree trained naturopaths are appropriately trained to identify high risk patients, to refer on when needed, safe and appropriate care. What we're concerned about is to what degree is that scope supported within the Woolworths model as things currently stand? You know, does Woolworths encourage these naturopaths, if they identify a potential health concern, to refer to another health professional, or are they expecting to maintain that in-house? And as I said, is there an expectation that they'll be prescribing products and supplements that the practitioner may not feel that the patient needs? You know, is there, because certainly some people are out there taking way too many things, and one of the roles of a naturopath might be to reduce down the amount of things they're taking rather than to add more into the mix.
It's really interesting how bodies, commercial bodies like Woolies, is taking advantage of the fact that there's a high usage of supplements. This country, I believe, has one of the highest use of supplements in the developed world. What would be an ideal situation if Woolies or other bodies, I'm not saying that it's just Woolies that would be doing this, would go in that direction and start providing very important services to people that can't afford paying for doctors or specialists, practitioners like naturopaths. What would be the ideal situation? How should Woolies be monitored? Or how should this kind of services that general patients are accessing through bodies like Woolies should be monitored, you think?
There's a lot of models in place. Access to free naturopathic advice is already available in health food stores and pharmacies where products are being sold. So those things are in place. Think of the situation with the pharmacy circumstance is that pharmacists are themselves a registered profession and have a professional code of conduct and business practices that they're expected to adhere to. The Pharmacy Guild has got some really great guidelines around appropriate practice around natural products. But at the moment, those aren't necessarily being applied by large corporations such as Woolworths and others who may do similar things. So the degree to which the constraints that automatically develop through naturopaths providing advice through a pharmacy are also being applied to Woolworths needs to be investigated. The health imperative of a pharmacy, pharmacists are great primary care community-based health service, and they often have a consultation room that can be more extensive consultations can be undertaken if someone needs more care. They often have very close to general practitioners and others that they can refer on to. And we really need to make sure that those safety nets that are in place for the current models that are being used are also being required in a corporate environment like Woolworths.
Are there other models like this that has been applied in developed worlds overseas and have come up with a working approach that's more ethical?
It's really hard to answer that question because health systems are so different. And, you know, and a measure of what's ethical is also, you know, highly variable in that regard. But certainly there's a lot of involvement of corporate involvement in the United States. But I think within public health, it's universally agreed that what they're doing there is not working for the health of the population and of the individual. So certainly in that circumstance, it's not. And most of the situations where good healthcare is being offered, it's where there is a clear set of boundaries and rules, and it's not driven by capitalism. It's driven by however that shows up. And so there's no easy answer to that question, but suffice to say that I think the important thing around health is that when it's financially driven as a primary outcome, then it's going to be a problem. And we need to make sure that the health outcomes are the things that are kept as of paramount importance.
Amy Steele is the Associate Professor, School of Public Health from the University of Technology, Sydney, and ending that interview.